I don't just talk about ideas, I actually execute them and I put follow through behind them. It doesn't have to be one huge step. It has to be little incremental steps. And so I really believe in the power of small steps.
Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia, the unexpected stories of Asia's disruptors. I'm your host, Chong Xiaowei. Every week, we talk with a young leader about the crazy smart approaches they're taking to achieve success and tackle some of the biggest issues facing Asia today. Some people like to throw around the term living your purpose, doing good, and positive impact. But this week's guest has serious credibility when it comes to doing so. Christine Amor-Lavar is empowering women through fundraising expeditions to the world's most inhospitable places, such as the Arctic Circle, and through her NGO is funneling the funds back to abused and underprivileged women. So it's safe to say she's earned the right to say she's living her purpose. This week, I speak with the founder of Women on a Mission and her planet Earth about what she's learned from leading expeditions that can apply to business, how her divorce reconnected her with nature, and why her mother calls her her little N. This is our conversation.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, Christine. Welcome to Crazy Smart Asia. So good to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Xiaowei. It's such a pleasure to be on the show.
So right now, we're going to start off with some quick fire questions as usual. Can you describe what you do in one sentence?
Absolutely. So I'm a philanthropist, an adventurer dedicated to empowering women, promoting environmental conservation, and supporting sustainable development through challenging expeditions around the world via my two NGOs, Women on a Mission and Her Planet Earth.
That's a lot.
Yes, it is. And I haven't told you everything yet.
Okay, next question. Do you have a mantra in life?
I do. And actually, I have it up on my Instagram. It is, we rise by lifting others. And I love that saying because it's a reminder of the fact that we need to support each other. We need to support other people.
So you have a very vibrant journey. But how do you deal with failure?
Well, failure, I've had my fair share of failure over the years. And as you probably know, failure is always one of the best teachers in life, right? So I found that success was very much connected to failure in everything I did. It's trying new things. And then if it doesn't work, you try a different way and you kind of twist that and find other ways to collaborate or approach a problem. So yeah, failure is very much part of success, I think.
I like that. And final question, what's your favorite mountain?
So I have a favorite mountain for sure, and it's in Switzerland. It's called Breithorn. And I had the privilege of climbing it with 80 women in the summer of 2022.
So let's chat a little bit about your childhood now. Were there any formative experiences that demonstrate your character and shaped you as an adventurer and a human rights advocate right now?
Yes. So I was born and raised in the Philippines, and for sure that shaped who I am today, the woman I am today, the values that I had early on came from there. You know, so my mother's Filipina, she's actually Chinese-Filipina, and my father is French and Swiss. And growing up, you know, I was very lucky to have many female role models around me. So my mom comes from a big family. I had lots of aunties, or titas, as we call them, with strong personalities, very entrepreneurial. And you know, in the Philippines, we've also had two women presidents as well. Corazon Aquino is one of my heroes. And so I had many examples of female role models early on. But I also was aware of the great inequality that existed. It's one of the poorest countries in our region. And so that really impacted me. My mother used to try to involve me and my siblings in charitable initiatives very early on to support women and children in particular. And I realized that when crisis hit, you know, when economic crisis hit or even the climate changed a lot, it was always the poorest that were most impacted. And so that really touched me early on. And she taught us a very important lesson was that privilege comes with great responsibilities. And these are values that I try to live by today and pass on to my four children as well.
Wow, you have four children.
I do.
So it seems like there are a lot of things going on in your life. You're involved in a lot of different organizations. Obviously, some of them are yours. Can you give us an idea of what a day in the life looks like for you?
So every day is very different for me. I would say that maybe 50% of my time is focused on my philanthropic work. So my two NGOs, you know, trying to organize our expeditions, our events, recruiting teams to come on expeditions with me. We've run about 22 expeditions so far over the last 12 years. And then the other part of my time is spent on my consultancy work. So I have a consultancy that I set up 10 years ago. I have two project managers working for me. So I have had many different clients over the years. The first 5 years, my main client was Temasek Trust, so the philanthropic arm of the Sovereign Wealth Fund here. I worked across six foundations running their comms and marketing. And then after that, when my boss at the time semi-retired, I started working with many different clients, mostly in technology. So I did some work with Google, NTT Limited, the Earth Observatory of Singapore here at NTU. So those are seasonal. So I do that work. And I also am on a few boards. So I'm on boards of three nonprofits. And actually, I have three other for-profit organizations that I sit on the board of. So my day is really full, but I am very organized and I try to really split my time on these activities. But there is a red line that runs through them. I like to think that way, you know, that there is still at the heart of what I've chosen to put in my life.
We talk about aha moments on Crazy Smart Asia, the moment that changed everything for you. What was your aha moment like?
So I definitely had an aha moment, as you call it. I call it my tipping point, actually. So, you know, as I said, you know, I grew up in the Philippines. I spent most of my life in Asia. I spent 6 years in Japan. I went to university there. Mm-hmm. I started working there. I came to Singapore, you know, after working in the US, Europe, you know, and I've been in Singapore 18 years. So I had a moment that happened in Singapore in 2005, I would say. I was, you know, kind of happily married for a second time. I had just given birth to my fourth child. And, you know, I was kind of cruising through life. I can't say I was, you know, I was happy. I was satisfied, you know, and I was not really looking for anything in particular. A passion of mine was sports. So I was working for Nike. I was, you know, so sports was at the heart of what I was doing. And then I met an incredible woman called Valerie Bofi by chance in Singapore when she was about to go off to Nepal to climb Everest, the tallest mountain in the world.
Wow.
And I remember meeting her and that really impacted me because I thought, wow, I had read a lot about Everest. I mean, many of you have seen that, you know, the film Everest and, you know, it's a dangerous climb.
Yeah.
She decided to go and she was a mom as well. So I was like quite intrigued that she was going to leave her husband and children and go and try to climb this mountain, you know, which is quite dangerous. And I had read so much about Everest and had climbed quite a bit as well in the Alps and in the Himalayas as well, but never something as big as Everest, you know. So I followed her climb. And on the summit, she unfolded a banner for women everywhere that said, bearing the flag for women everywhere for a charity called Women for Women International that supports women survivors of war. And that act of courage and defiance kind of woke me up, you know, and it hit me in the gut, if you will, in that I realized that I wanted to use my skills and experience, all my experience working in marketing and sports and adventure and my passion, you know, for kind of communication. I wanted to use that to support other women in need. Maybe at the back of my mind was also seeing what I had seen in the Philippines, that great inequality that impacted many countries. And so that was the moment where I realized I'm going to focus on this. I'm going to use my love of adventure. And so together we set up Women on a Mission with another co-founder called Karine Moj. And we started taking a team of women to climb to Everest Base Camp to raise $150,000 for women survivors of war. And that's how we started. And after that, you know, every year we started organizing another expedition. And that became my mission. You know, I realized as I focused on supporting women who were marginalized, survivors of war, domestic abuse, human trafficking, I connected with charities in Singapore, with AWARE here in Singapore, with Karina Lim, who's an amazing woman, you know, who runs that beautiful charity. I connected with many other charities as a result, and I became more aware of the issues impacting women, not just, you know, in countries at war, but also in developing countries or even first world countries like in Singapore. So it became my mission. And then I set up my second NGO a few years after to focus on women impacted by climate change.
And when was it that you started Women on a Mission?
So Women on a Mission was 2012 and then Her Planet Earth was 2017.
Wow. Yes. So it's been more than 10 years since
definitely.
Women on a Mission.
Yeah. So I really had a change in my focus, if you will. And that's, you know, really impacted my life in such a positive way. I wouldn't be here sitting talking to you if I hadn't made those choices, right? Because it kind of opened up so many other opportunities for me in my life after all, you know, to become an advocate, to work in different fields in my career. So it was really a choice that changed everything.
So you mentioned a little bit about Women on a Mission and one of your greatest achievements have been, right? Bringing women to climb base camp. What would be your proudest moment for Her Planet Earth?
With Women on a Mission, as I said, it's been, you know, almost 12 years actually. We've raised in total for Women on a Mission $1.5 million.
Wow.
We've had 12 expeditions, you know, we're still going strong. We're planning an expedition to the Arctic in August this year. It's a kayaking expedition. And so that's really going strong. And we're, you know, we're really looking forward to continue to support women survivors of war in different projects and initiatives around the world through our funds. With Her Planet Earth, it's been, as I said, almost 7 years now.
Yeah.
We've raised almost the same amount, just over $1 million, focusing, of course, on conservation initiatives, agricultural projects, helping women grow crops that are more suited for the soil in their region, looking for livelihoods and conservation for women. So slightly different lens.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose one of the proudest moments for me, if I had to pick one with Her Planet Earth, was when we went on an expedition to the Philippines in Palawan.
Very nice place.
Exactly. And I brought a team of divers from Singapore, women divers, to work on coral restoration in the islands of Palawan. And then we met with local women, fisher folks and women, you know, working in that area, and really conducted workshops to talk about how climate change has impacted their livelihoods, what are their plans and hopes for the future. And then we learned as much from them as I hope we were able to share with them. So these are the moments that really connect us universally as women, you know, women who have privileges and education and opportunity, with women maybe who have less but who are deeply connected to the earth and who are every day working on their livelihood with Mother Nature, you know, either growing crops or cultivating or getting their livelihood from the sea, for example. So these are the moments that make it all worthwhile for me, learning from other women in the field.
It sounds amazing. And you also have written a book about your expeditions called Wild Wisdom. That's a really nice title.
Thank you.
So it contains life lessons from leading teams to some of the most inhospitable places in the world. So over a decade, as you mentioned just now, you've taken hundreds of women of all nationalities, ages, backgrounds to remote locations around the world on very challenging, often pioneering expeditions that really push them outside of their comfort zone. What would you say has been some of the biggest lessons you've learned leading these trips?
Yeah, there's been many lessons. And as you said, I wrote a whole book about it. You know, I would say one of the biggest lessons for me has been learning the importance of collaboration and that leadership is not just one person in front. You can lead from the back in many ways. I really love that that thought, you know, because for me, when I was starting out on this journey of trying to organize groups of women, take them to remote places around the world to raise funds for different charities, you know, I just went about it as I thought was best. But then along the way, you realize that there are many different ways to lead and you have to also trust your team.
Right.
So, you know, as I said, you know, there were so many moments where you learned about, you know, how to understand the motivation of your team, how you inspire them to come and unite around a bigger cause, something bigger than us, you know, the plight of women impacted by violence or the plight of women who are struggling with the effects of climate change. That is usually what you need to put at the heart of bringing a group together, because we are, as you said, all different nationalities, ages and background. I've had teammates from 22 to 61 years old, CEOs to artists, pilots, stay-at-home moms, you know, and so we bring this collection of women and unite them around the cause. You learn so much about how to motivate them, how to manage them, how to, you know, make sure that they are aware of, you know, the risks involved, you know, how to motivate them to train, how to fundraise and ask their networks for support and donations. It's not easy to fundraise as well. So there have been countless learning, you know, moments for me. And I'm still learning every day, you know, as we plan our next trips, because we're dealing with incredible women who, you know, have choices. The ones who come with me have choices. And just finding the right way to make sure we motivate everyone. It's a lifelong journey of learning how to be a good leader. That's what I aspire to be a better leader, a more humble leader, maybe a more efficient leader. And sometimes, you know, I think we're not really born leaders. I wasn't, you know, I try to become a better one as I go along, you know, and so that's one of the key focuses for me too as well, moving forward.
Was that something that you learned about yourself while organizing these expeditions?
Yes. I mean, you know, when I was at Nike and I had a manager role, so I had women on my team, there is a form of leadership in corporate roles that you get as you get more experience in your job and you have people reporting to you. But leading teams on expeditions in remote places really brings out a lot more uncertainty. Mm. You can plan as much as you can with equipment, itinerary, but there's always the unexpected, a teammate that's not feeling well, the weather that changes, an injury that happens, you know. And there were many moments where we hadn't expected certain situations. So you learn how to be more adaptable and adjust and motivate your team and make sure that they are feeling secure, but different people need different types of communication. Yeah. So again, you know, it's as you get older and as you put yourself out of your comfort zone, then you learn that you are actually, you can be a better leader. And so that's what I discovered through these expeditions.
Mm. Would you recommend these expeditions to everyone? Or do you think that you require some kind of qualities or some kind of traits?
So every expedition is different and unique. And so when I recruit the team or the women who contact me about the expeditions, they will usually be a certain type. So usually, yes, they're a little bit sporty and they're kind of brave as well, I would say, you know, because there is a bit of the unexpected in terms of remote places. But it can be something that is approached by, we've had first-time trekkers that never bought trekking shoes or never slept in a tent. And they were a little bit anxious, but then they were totally fine because they made sure they were as prepared as possible.
Yeah.
So it's really a very personal question, right? So, and sometimes people are at moments in their life where they need something like this. So we've had women that have gone through relationship breakups or changes in their career, and that's when they're looking for an extreme challenge. And so they approach us, you know, and other times they might have young kids and they might not want to do something like that. So it's not for everyone, but in a way it's approachable and accessible to everyone who has an adventurous spirit, I would say.
Okay. So, I mean, a lot of our listeners are actually business leaders or Asia's future leaders, right? Are there any skills that are transferable from these expeditions to business?
Oh, there's so many. And I do actually a lot of keynote speeches for corporates where I bring out, I usually share like three lessons from my expeditions of things that didn't always go as planned. And then I pull out the leadership lessons from that. So, you know, if there was a failure in one of the expeditions in terms of logistics, what were the leadership lessons there? Mm. And one of the key ones that I always love is that when things go well, you know, you always credit the team. But when things go wrong or when mistakes are made, the leader always takes full responsibility. Mm. And that was one of the lessons I learned early on, you know, because if you're responsible for bringing a group together, and even if mistakes are made that are out of your control, that was maybe the logistics support team that made a mistake, you still need to take full responsibility. So there are many things that are transferable in the corporate world, right? And in some ways, expeditions really highlight the key leadership traits that are needed to bring a team and make them working around one big goal, as you do in the corporate world.
So what is your next expedition? And when is it?
So on Monday, I'm flying off to India.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm flying off to India and we're going with Her Planet Earth, my environmental NGO, and taking 13 women to 4,000 meters to support the Snow Leopard Conservancy Trust of India. So our funds go to employ more women to work in conservation, to track snow leopards, which are endangered in this area. So we will be following the trackers at minus 20 degrees in snow, you're looking at how they work and spot the leopards with them. So that's going to be the next one. And then I'm back in Singapore for 5 days and I'm heading to the Gobi Desert after with 15 other women. Again, with Her Planet Earth, to cross the Gobi Desert on the back of Bactrian camels. These are the long, furry, hairy camels. And this is to raise $50,000 for the Nature Conservancy, which is a big environmental NGO that is protecting biodiversity. So the funds will go to support women in Mongolia who are herders and who are working very closely to protect the land in those areas.
Mm. And again, these women are not necessarily in the environmental space, right?
Not at all. These are just indigenous local women from Mongolia. The women I'm taking with me are multinational in terms of their background. So we have some coming from Dubai, the US, Singapore, Europe, you know. So the teams are always very international.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That's amazing. So you've been painting a very breezy journey to success, but I'm sure there are challenges and also setbacks along the way. What would you say has been the most significant setback that you've had to face? And also, how did you overcome it?
Oh, that's a difficult question because there were many. And I would say probably the one that comes to mind was when I set up my second NGO, Her Planet Earth. I assumed that because we had quite a bit of success with Women on a Mission already, I assumed that when I would approach environmental NGOs and offer my support for fundraising, that they would welcome me with open arms. And yeah. It wasn't the case at all. So I set up, the website. I found the name. Actually, my husband came up with the name Her Planet Earth. This is wonderful. A local PR agency and advertising agency came up with the logo. Everything was set. And then I started contacting, some of the environmental NGOs here saying, I'm going to raise funds for you. And I honestly thought that they would just be very receptive, and they weren't, because not everybody wants help or think they need help, So that was an interesting one. So I just persevered. I started supporting one of them on a small initiative to try to have less people eat shark fin soup and things like that. And then I organized with my team a small expedition to the Philippines to help a local charity that was collecting plastic from the beaches to make into reusable items for sale. So we started like that, little by little. And I worked on it every single day. And it was really after two years that it started taking off and getting traction. And suddenly people were paying attention. And it was hard, because you just think that sometimes when you try something, it's going to work. It doesn't always work. It takes perseverance and working on it every single day. And finally, now we have a lot of recognition. Her Planet Earth, we're getting people writing to us, wanting to get involved in conservation initiatives, coral restoration expeditions, supporting different, and sustainability is such at the forefront of the conversation at the moment. And so now, it's nice. We have options in terms of wait lists of teammates wanting to come with us, etc. But it wasn't easy at the beginning.
Has there ever been a moment where you had to let go of an idea because you knew it wouldn't work after months and months or maybe years of trying?
Let go of an idea. Well, I suppose, I mentioned my fashion business, which, I had for about 3.5 years, and I did sell it. I didn't make much of a profit at all when I sold it. And so in a way, I suppose I could have embraced online selling, and that at the time it was just not as big as it is now. So I would think that maybe I could have done that and maintained the business. But to be honest, I was ready to do something else. So I think what I try to do in life, because I do try many initiatives, I just launched a community in Singapore called Terra Goddesses using an NFT-based membership. So we did an event. I have 30 members already, and I'm hoping to grow it to 200 people just in Singapore. But, I don't worry too much about if it's going to succeed or fail. I just know that if I really care about it, I need to work on it a little bit every day. And that my career path has shown me that if I do that, it still amounts to something. So I don't focus too much on is it working or is it not? Or should we pivot a little bit? I'm very flexible like that. The intention is to get a community to support, good initiatives that protect the planet as it is with Terra Goddesses, I know that I can pivot it and channel it in that space in some capacity.
Yeah.
So I suppose I don't really think of it as black and white so much. I just think of it as moving communities, bringing people together, supporting good initiatives in one of my channels.
Yeah. So talking to you here, your whole vibe and your energy is very optimistic, very positive, right? Has there ever been any time in your journey where you felt like, okay, I'm getting a little bit tired, I kind of want to maybe give up? Has there ever been a moment like that?
I don't think so. No, when I look back now, I don't think I've ever, and I hope I never feel that way, wanting to give up. It seems to me too simplistic to think like that. For me, it's much more about, if something doesn't really work, then let's work on something else. When I left Nike, because I actually left Nike twice, and it was a company I loved, So I left once, I went back to school, and then I got offered a job and I came back. I wanted to try fashion, retail, because I had a bit of experience in retail through Nike. And I tried that and it was not easy. I sold it, as I said, you know, I didn't make much money on it. So I don't view that as a failure. I view that as an experience that was really humbling for me, because you realize that when you're in retail and you sell to people, wow, it's super humbling. People really treat you so poorly, and you really have sympathy for people who work in this field. You know, I have so much respect for people who do that. It's not easy. And then you learn to observe and listen. And I took those skills with me as I continued in my journey. So I think the lowest point in my life was probably when I divorced from my first husband, because I really felt that that was a big failure in my personal life. You know, and I'm somebody who is high achieving and who wants everything to work. And I fight for many things in my life for it to work.
Yeah.
But sometimes in relationship, it's just the end of a journey together, right? So for me, that was a low point. Mm. And that, in an interesting way, that was the time when I reconnected with my love of nature and the mountains. And maybe that became the springboard of what attracted me when I saw Valérie and the mountains and setting up NGOs that have sports and adventure and trekking at the core, right? So I don't think that life is black and white. I don't think that something ends, it's the end, and it's failure. It's just the start of something else. I am by nature very optimistic, and I've always been like that, I think, as a child. I was a very sensitive child. I was very affected by the poverty I saw. I remember when I came back from, we lived in France for a few years when I was a child. My father tried to set up a business there with his uncle, which didn't work. And then he came back to the same job in the Philippines. And I remember I came back, I was 10 years old, and the poverty really struck me. When we came back from the airport in my aunt's car and I saw the slums and kids that were my age just living on the street with nothing, it really, really touched me. And I had this sense of injustice.
Yeah.
So I really feel that life is a connection of dots, you know, that you hop on to the next one, you pivot, you change. It's not about success or failure. It's part of the journey. And so there are moments where you're lower for sure, but maybe it prepares you for something else.
Mm.
As my attraction to the love of mountains came when I was at such a low point in my life from my divorce, I got strength from nature.
Mm. You mentioned that your mom introduced you to charity work very early on, right? Was there a specific lesson or maybe something that they said or an advice that came from your parents or your mom specifically that you still remember to today?
Yeah, so I think, you know, obviously beyond the one I mentioned earlier, which is, you know, privilege comes with great responsibilities. I think my mom always made a point for me to know my values, who I am, you know. So she was very proud. She's very proud as a Filipina still today, you know. And it's funny because when I grew up in the Philippines, I had friends in the French school who were also half Filipino and half, let's say, European. And because we're a poor country, sometimes there was a shame associated with being Filipino. But I was lucky that my mom was very proud of her Asian roots.
Mm.
And so she always said to me, and she actually even gave us like a Tagalog tutor. She wanted us to know the language, not just speak French and English, you know, that we were having at school in the French school, right? So I think one of the things she taught me was be proud of your origins and learn about them. Learn about your history, your culture, your Chinese grandmother. My Chinese grandmother lived till 101 and
Wow. She
had a family. You know, so I think learning who you are is also learning about your ancestry and your roots and making an effort to really understand those stories about your family on both sides of your parents.
Mm.
And so that gave me a strong identity of who I am. I'm very proud to be Asian and I'm also very proud to have these European roots. And that allows me to be more confident when I approach many things in life, knowing who you are. But sometimes it takes many years to understand who you are, right? And hopefully we keep learning all our life about, you know, what is it that really touches us? What is it that we care about? What kind of blood we have in our veins in terms of our ancestors? I think the Asian connection, people in Asia really understand that because there is the respect of ancestors that's very strong. You know, filial piety is very strong in Asian culture.
Yeah.
And so I have that too from my mother's side.
So what would you say personally is a priority in your life right now?
One of my biggest priorities is to, how do I increase the legacy and the impact that I've had so far?
Mm.
You know, so as I said, I've been doing this for about 12 years, that kind of advocacy work, impact work. And I still feel it's a drop in the ocean, you know, like it's still something because, you know, we've touched a few, you know, as a group with my teammates and my many partners, it's ripple effects, right? So it's positive. It gives me a lot of joy and happiness, but it's still not enough. So I'm driven by a desire to increase my impact. And so that's why I've accepted more board roles because it's also a way of leading in this space through sustainable investing, for example, trying to support entrepreneurs that are coming up with solutions to, you know, help our planet decarbonize, you know, through my nonprofit board roles, which are unpaid. You know, it is my way of trying to support them further than what I'm doing with my expeditions. I want to build a legacy and I want to continue to have an impact and also to try to bring more youth to hopefully, you know, follow that route. So a lot of times when I have many mentees and I have mentors too, but a lot of times my mentees ask me, so, you know, what do you think? I said, well, definitely choose something you love in your career and because you'll be more successful. That's a classic. Mm. But if there's an advocacy that you care about, if there's a cause that you know, you really care about that has touched you maybe as a child, I often tell them, think back about your youth. Think back of when you were a child. What did you really care about? Was there something that touched you? Then focus on that and make sure that you try to find a way in your life to create space for it so that either you support it as a volunteer in the community, that you organize something so that it fits somewhere in your life. Because for me, it gave me the most fulfillment and happiness and it opened many other doors for me. And that's not why you do it, but it really, in the end, when you're happier, then you're more, you vibrate at a different frequency, right? So you then influence other people and hopefully you use that passion and energy for good. And so I think that's what I would focus on, is just to how can each person focus on the impact they want to have, because we all have that power to leave a legacy, right? And so as I get older in life and I see my kids grow up, I want to continue to have a positive impact in some capacity.
So you mentioned impact investing. Do you want to talk a little bit about what your involvement is like and what is your focus in that area?
So I'm really enjoying this area, I have to say. And, you know, so I'm involved with a wonderful VC called Investable as well. I'm on their board and we have a climate tech fund here in Singapore. Mm. We're supporting entrepreneurs across Southeast Asia who are coming up with amazing innovative solutions. We have entrepreneurs who are based in Singapore. One of our entrepreneurs called Teora won the Livability Challenge by Temasek. You know, so it's so interesting supporting as a board member these incredible startups and founders who are so smart and hardworking. I love, you know, supporting different entrepreneurs, not just in Southeast Asia, but also in Africa. So I'm also involved with different funds in Africa that are looking at supporting young African entrepreneurs. Mm. I mean, that is so exciting. You know, it's funny. I have a funny story because when I graduated in Japan, my first internship was in a bank in finance. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to work in finance. I don't like it at all. And now I feel I've come full circle and I realize the power of capital, of moving capital towards good initiatives, you know, in sustainability, in supporting women entrepreneurs, having more diversity in this ecosystem. And it really is energizing. I'm learning so much from the team that I work with on my different board roles. I love meeting the entrepreneurs, learning about how they come up with ideas. And in some ways, I feel that my philanthropic world and my, if you will, my consultancy work or my board roles in sustainable investment are coming together. Mm. Because hopefully in the future, the only kind of investment will be sustainable investing and that people won't be investing in things that are, you know, oil, gas, and coal that are hurting the planet. But more and more people will just be investing in things that are positive for the planet, that is not harming society, you know. And so I'm finding that alignment happening and I'm really enjoying it.
You are doing so much, I must say. So this show is also all about uncovering the unexpected stories of people that we may not know about. What do you think people don't know about you or find surprising about you or your journey?
One of the things that has surprised some people is how organized I am, because I actually have a system and I'm happy to share this a little bit, because people think, okay, you're doing a lot of things and but how do you actually get this done, right? Yeah. Because so I'm actually very, very nerdy when it comes to organizing my time. And I've started doing this 20 years ago. I used to write every year a very detailed, almost like a business plan about how I was going to approach the year. Mm. And now I've digitalized it. It used to be handwritten. And actually, it's really, really detailed. I spread it over 12 months and I print it out once a year and I put it in a special folder. And I bring it out every Sunday when I plan my week and to align what I'm trying to do, either in my career, in my finances, in my mental state, in my health, and with my children. It's really, really detailed. There's actually a little bit of science behind how I approach what I want to focus on. And every year I also decide where I want to divest my time and where I want to increase my focus.
Okay. And how do you do that? Is it like a scoring system?
So it's not a scoring system. I start, there's a process. So I start with first I always analyze the year and I actually pat myself on the back and I have this gratitude moment where I look at all the things that did work well and I really take time to take stock of what worked well, you know, what did I learn? So that's a big important exercise. And then I focus on what are the things that I outline what I want to focus on that year, and, you know, in the different buckets. And then I go much deeper and then I put it in a in a, as I said, in a monthly plan, right? Yeah. And so when I look at that, then I take a step back and realize, okay, well, if I really want to focus on this, then I'm going to have to probably divest from certain things. Or, you know, I also, as you get older, you also realize you want to stay away from oxygen thieves. I call them oxygen thieves. Or people that are, when you spend time with them, you don't really feel great after with. You know, you really have to be aware of that because ultimately you need to try to remove those moments or people from your life because you have to a certain amount of energy. And if you want to achieve your mission, you really need to put that energy there. So that's how I remove myself from certain things. Because I analyze how did I feel about that interaction.
And when do you usually do this practice?
End of the year.
End of the year.
Yeah,
so
every
December.
Year.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. It's amazing. So you're also a successful person, but not a lot of people will be able to reach your level of success. How do you think you got to where you are today?
Well, I can't take credit for everything. I have had many supporters over the year, not just you know, parents that encouraged me, gave me a good education, gave me lots of love. So the foundation was very lucky. Yeah. I'm very aware of that. You know, not everybody comes from a loving home, or some people have trauma in their childhood. You know, we've all had a little bit of trauma some way, some people worse than others. But I had a solid start in my life and a lot of love. My parents were not perfect, but they gave me a lot of love. So that was very much part of it. And then the discipline that I put towards the initiatives that I wanted for sure was part of the success because, yeah, you can have an idea, but if you don't execute and work on it every day. My mom calls me a little ant, like a little ant that, you know, works every day little bit by little bit by little bit. And over the years, I see a pattern. You know, I don't just talk about ideas. I actually execute them and I put follow through behind them. And I realize over the time that it doesn't have to be one huge step, you know, or, you know, just like that. It has to be little incremental steps.
Yeah.
And so I really believe in the power of small steps that way, you know. And yeah, that discipline has been one of the key in terms of, you want to call it success or just achieving certain things in my life.
So if there was one insight that our listeners can take away today, what would it be from
Work
you?
Work every day on what you want to grow and develop.
Okay. Thank you so much, Christine, for joining us on Crazy Smart Asia. It's been a great conversation.
It was wonderful to chat with you, Sylvie. Thank you so much.
That's it for yet another episode of Crazy Smart Asia. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to follow us wherever you're listening to this. Crazy Smart Asia is produced by Josie Kota and edited, mixed, and mastered by Ben Beheshti. Genty's digital editor is Valerie Lim. Crazy Smart Asia is hosted by me, Chong Xiaowei. In the meantime, do remember,
stay away from oxygen thieves.
See you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.